What I see, especially with like gymnastics and dances, anything which requires more artistry, they're very good at hiding things. So the typical tests that you do with certain athletes or movement screens or anything, they don't really apply to them unless you add load or add speed to it. They're very kinesthetically aware of the body, so they can adapt to the way to train around it, except your muscles are still set a certain way and your body still applies force to it in a certain way. So it's going to have an effect somewhere down the line.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Shift Show, where my number one goal is to bring you tools, ideas, and the latest science that will change gymnasts' lives. My name is Dave Tilley. Today in the podcast, I am very excited to bring on Tom Callow, who is another wonderful strength coach. He's working out in Australia, and he has a ton of experience helping gymnasts learn how to lift and helping them get stronger and more powerful and working on their sprinting speed. He has a really good Instagram that reviews some of the stuff that they're doing, but I got introduced to Tom through Becky on the podcast, and I've been following his Instagram kind of behind the scenes for a year or so now, just kind of studying and watching kind of the methodology that he uses. And it's really cool to see how he is, you know, helping gymnasts to, like I said, get stronger, more powerful, and kind of really be explosive, right? And so we're seeing more and more gymnasts who are opening their minds and are using this kind of hybrid model, which is maybe in the off season doing 1 to 2 days of general weight training with dumbbells and barbells and kettlebells, but then still doing maybe 2 to 3 days of gymnastics specific strengthening with their rope climbs and leg lifts and like all that kind of stuff, the things that we know and we love. And I think people are typically a little bit overwhelmed with, how do I get the best of both worlds? How do I get somebody stronger and faster, more powerful from a weight room, but also try to make sure we don't lose out on those essential handstands and rope climbs and leg lifts? And so I've been trying my best to get on a lot of great information here about how we get this kind of happy medium between the two. And Tom and I really speak quite a bit to, what are we doing to try to make sure that parents really understand and that coaches really understand and that gymnasts really understand that this is an accessory thing we're adding in. We're not trying to replace all their other gymnastics specific strengthening. And so I think that we talk a lot about that, which is like, you know, what is going on when somebody comes in to do a training session with Tom or other, you know, myself or others, is that we're trying to do the basics. We're trying to really understand how to get them stronger, build them out to be more resilient against injury, and try to increase their power and their explosiveness to help their skills get better. So we kind of break down a lot of these things, which is, what are the principles that he believes in? What exercises is he using with gymnasts to really make them stronger? What kind of things does he think are really important for speed and development and power work? And how does he tie that all together to make sure that we're getting the right balance there of in the gym versus out of the gym? And so it's a wonderful conversation and a lot of really, really great value. And when this episode comes out, it'll be announced that Tom is actually one of our speakers for the 2023 Shift Symposium. He's going to be talking about explosive lower body power, right? So sprinting and speed development and trying to really get athletes faster. And that's a really great area of expertise he has, is on that explosiveness and on that kind of like gymnastic specific transfer. And so he's going to be a great person to talk about this a little bit. And so if you do want to learn about this, he's on the third day of the gymnastic strength and conditioning today. The first day we're doing this year is for all for medical providers. So talking about injuries, elbow OCD, Achilles injuries, back pain, that kind of stuff. The second day is for coaches. So men's and women's, there's a separate lectures, 7 separate lectures or 8 separate lectures for each of those. So men's technical and women's technical, some very exciting to be announced guests, but we're going to talk about more of the specific, you know, floor, vault, pommels, drills, bounding, tumbling, all that kind of stuff. Third day strength and conditioning to learn from all the strength coaches about what exercises they're doing, about basics and shaping and core work and all that kind of jazz too as well. So the weekend is pretty epic, and it's really fun to see people already jumping on board and wanting to do this. But this is going to be a phenomenal add, which is Tom's lecture on Sunday as well, about some of the things like sprinting and speed that a lot of people really are trying to get down to. So yeah, I hope everyone definitely takes advantage of that opportunity, which is, if you want to learn more, go to www.shiftmovementscience.com/2023 Shift Symposium. And then if you want to just listen to this episode, we'd love to hear what is helpful from this, right? You know, tweet at us or take a screenshot, put it on your phone and say, I like this. Can you talk to me more about sprinting? Can you talk to me about more deadlifting? Can you talk to me more about programming? Whatever you want to know. The more information we have, the better, to make sure we get really high quality podcasts out. So I hope you all enjoy this wonderful conversation with Tom. All right, Tom, how are you, my friend?
Yeah, very well. Thank you. Thank you for having me on the podcast.
It is my pleasure. I have consistently said the podcast is my way to cheat and talk to people who I really want to talk to anyways, and get to put a podcast out for it. So this one is selfishly to learn and to connect and to hang out and kind of touch base. And then, yeah, I think hopefully it'll be really helpful for other people as well. But I'm definitely selfish on this one.
Yeah, I think it goes both ways with that as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, I'm familiar with your work, and I've low-key stalked your Instagram for the last couple of years, and
followed along with your journey, and I see you're doing a lot of wonderful things. And it's, I actually just filmed an episode with Scott Wilgris, and we were talking about programming, and it was hilarious because we didn't actually talk about what we were going to do for a program, but we made one kind of like mocking it up. And he's like, I literally would write the same program. And it's funny how like you kind of sift into the same ideas around gymnastics, strength and conditioning and programming and what exercises are useful. And I was looking through your Instagram the last couple of weeks, and I was like, oh yeah, this makes sense. This is what we would do anyways, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It comes to the point where, I think once you have the foundational knowledge of what it is, it is pretty similar. It all starts from one place, and it's just how you, I guess, add your flair to it. Or especially, I think, where you do live, whether it's, well, it, especially for me, if it's like European or if it's Australian or North American and like that, you kind of have your own little coaching flares of how you have done things, especially with what you've learned and experienced, and you just bring that to the program.
Yeah. And so I am curious about that is obviously I don't know your entire background, but how did you get into the point where you were consistently working with a lot of gymnasts? Cause I feel like it's a weird niche group in the begin with, but also like it's hard these days to convince gymnasts to come lift. And once they see it, they're on board, but it's a tough onboarding for some coaches, you know?
Yeah. You're really right with that one. I literally fell into it. A few years ago, I wouldn't have considered or knowing how to work with gymnasts unless you're a part of a national governing body. It kind of came out of the blue where I was talking to some coaches here in Australia. They were also from the UK, and that kind of got into the sink of the coaching's going well, and a lot of the physio rehab medical side is being looked at, and the missing part in that little tripod is the strength conditioning or the physical preparation. Background for me is from the UK. I grew up and lived overseas, so hence why I'm in Australia now, even though I'm from the UK, even though I might sound like I'm not too English anymore.
Like Becky as well. Shout out Becky, also a UK transplant to US. Although, I love Becky to death. She's definitely got some Aussie flair. She won't say it, but she's definitely got it.
Yeah, it sneaks in there, and it's the more I hang around with them, the more it goes into that, the twings and the twangs. And then when I go hang around with more people in the UK, then it starts to go a little more prim and proper. So sure. Yeah, things start to change. In the UK, studied strength and conditioning, and I started from sports science, actually, because I didn't really know too much about strength conditioning. And I saw one of my mates was studying strength conditioning, and I didn't really consider it all. And had a look at what he was doing. I was like, wow, that's pretty awesome. And jumped at the opportunity to change courses to that. And a little down the line, interned with Bristol Academy of Sport, which is a little performance hub where it's multiple sports adjacent to a college. So we had pick with a lot of athletes and a lot of different sports, and really got to play around with understanding the needs of different sports versus play a little rugby. I wanted to go into that rugby strength conditioning, and that was kind of what I had my mindset to. And I'm so grateful that I got to experience so many different sports and have that different outlook of it, which comes to the point where I am now, where everything that I've learned from all different sports and all different areas really links well. And so, well, I can just take that a little bit out of maybe like rugby or a little bit of like table tennis or basketball, and I'm just add that into this and be like, that works really well with these athletes.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And I'm sure you've crossed paths, I think, with Nick and with Dan and with that kind of British crew, you know, a little bit. So it's cool to see people's the way they stumble into working with gymnastics, right? Like I know that Nick didn't know at the time, but desperately needed Dan. And then Dan really was able to help Nick, and Nick, you know, Dan needed Nick, and they helped a lot of athletes in between that, which is really cool. And I was the same way, which is, you know, I was a traditional coach, and I really didn't know what I didn't know until I got to my postdoctoral work. And I was like, oh wait, like the Mike Boyles, the Eric Cressys of the world. I was like, I am really behind the curve here, you know, but like you pull that in and it kind of comes with it. And I think we see on our side, you know, a lot of people, obviously I work in a facility that has a hybrid PT and strength model, but what do you find people come to you for? Is it like, I had an injury and I need to get better, or I'm like, I'm done with PT or physio, but like, I'm not quite there yet. Or is it performance? Like what are they mainly seeking your services for?
It depends which sort of crowd. So it's mainly like coaches, parents, and athletes, or gymnasts, which usually the gymnasts is a lot of it is either social media, it's just, it's everything's sorted out there now, and it's only getting bigger. And also with them, it's, if it's through their friends, either increasing their performance or having that injury risk really drop off, or the aspect where they're actually starting to study now and they're starting to learn that way and they want to incorporate that and start learning more of that. With coaches, it's more about CPD, coach education, especially again, if they're, if they are open to going down the rabbit hole, there's a big rabbit hole once you dip a toe into it. And I also get a lot of referrals from practitioners, you know, especially that if a lot of work has been done in the physio room and maybe they don't have that sort of hybrid model, or a lot of it has been just literally back from the gym to the clinic room, then it's kind of the missing part of going through it. So yeah, a lot of it has been looking to integrate that through, which is usually through the injury route first. And then performance does come second, because yeah, good things take time. And once they kind of figure out and start feeling the difference and start seeing the difference, then things start to trickle over that way.
Yeah, it's something I've thought a lot about on your point to social media, which is obviously, you know, our company does a lot of social media, but also I think there has been a massive positive ripple effect of what happens when, in here in the States, we have so many universities that show their college teams lifting in the summer and trap bar deadlifting. Like, you see gymnasts who are younger elites and go to college and they're like, oh my God, I can't believe she trap bar deadlifts and she's doing jumps with dumbbells. But also it's like a massive hat tip and honestly a thank you to people like Ellie Black and Scott, who are showing Ellie working out, right? And the Downies, Ellie and Becky Downey as well, who are showing themselves working out. Like, a lot of teams, when a lot of the elites are showing their adjunct strength and conditioning work, I think it opens the eyes of a lot of young people who are like, oh, I didn't know that was something that is important. And if they're doing it, and I mean, Ellie's been lifting for 12 years with Scott. Like, I think that's really cool, because I don't know, there's not enough things that I can say or convince people until they see their heroes lifting and doing what they're wanting to do. So yeah. Is that similar in Australia? Is you guys have that same ripple effect, or is it just like an organic social media, I should say?
I'd say it's starting to, I feel, personally, again, coming from different sports, I feel it's a little bit behind the curve. And maybe because I feel gymnastics is quite a private sport, where compared to a lot of the mainstream sports are, you know, one of the top 3 to 5 sports in the country, it's all kind of set up and there's a lot of funding going into that.
Right.
When it's a lot of private sports, it tends to take a lot more time if they're open to do it or not. And if they're not looking to integrate that through. So I think it does take time and it's slowly getting into that aspect. And especially I reckon with a lot of the younger lifters who are now open to that, and the parents are starting to see things and having a little bit of education themselves of seeing the changes and differences, then yes, we are starting to see that come through. But yeah, it's been a bit of a slow build into that. There's always roadblocks and, you know, it's a lot of it is trying to get them engaged to understand. Like with some of the older kids that I'm training, a lot of that has been, they've already come through a training program, have been in gymnastics for a certain amount of years. And a lot of the time it's kind of like damage limitation in the sense where a lot of it is there's already like preconceived motions. There's already certain trainings around how they've physically done the movements, and a lot of time with that it's like, okay, how can we get them to the point where they are feeling okay, where we can drop that injury rate, where it might be the small things of the you know, the forearms or the ankle, anything like that. And a lot of the ones which a lot of gymnasts have is just the back pain. We're trying to really get to the point where it feels okay. Like one of the girls I had was, I'm trying to get everyone through the hinge of an RDL deadlift, and I feel that's a harder way to coach the hinge, but also a very important one for that whole posterior chain, the whole firing of that back, you know, back of the body. And that really does create that power and stops a lot of injuries. But in that sense of trying to get it, a lot of the times when we get to the weight where they feel it's probably going to do a little more structural preparation, it's always a pain point. So I think when we started with one of them, it took like 6 months to the point where I just started to not get back pain. And that was like, that was a win for me. but it wasn't just the RDL, it was all the other hinge motions we were trying to get around to do to get to that point. And with a lot of the younger girls, they still have that. They're still developing, maturing in that way. And with a lot of them who, you know, they could start with like literally 8 or 10, or had one which started at 6, which again, wasn't lifting any weights. It was just getting the right sort of movements where they could take that into their gymnastics and then allow that to kind of flourish. Mm. They had that coaching as well as the others, and definitely seeing the injury decrease with the younger girls and having that baseline set with a lot of the older girls. It's been, how can I manage around that? And then how can I kind of keep building? So the build cycle is a lot slower than the younger girls, but then also the competition and demand is also a little bit different with events and how much stress they're going to put on their bodies.
Mm, yeah, it's such an interesting point you bring up, which is I think a lot of people in the gymnastics world finally take the first step into strength and conditioning for performance things. They want to run faster, they want to jump higher, they want to get an extra half on a vault or whatever. And it's funny because the first thing they notice that's the best, they actually feel better, right? They're like, oh, my joints don't feel as terrible in the middle of the season. Like my back is feeling better, my knees are feeling better. On the physio side, I honestly feel like I'm a strength coach more than I'm a PT some days. Like, of course I treat post-op people in surgeries, but I treated 7 gymnasts today, and for 4 of them, we just spent 45 minutes in the weight room. You know, it's like, I'm just giving them a basic strength program. And it's funny because they start to catch wind with my wrists feel better, my back feels better. And then once they're getting through more volume done without pain in the gym with series or stuff like that, then they start to actually notice after maybe 6-12 months when they're really put into the grindstone, like, and I'm actually running faster. And I'm actually, you know, a couple of girls that we've had, older girls, thought they were kind of like, you know, gonna hang it up like junior, senior university. Like, I'm just gonna barely limp through and, you know, get my trainer to just tape my ankles more. But they're actually, their junior year and their senior year was the best year of their career right now, composed to last, you know, 5 years ago, whereas they were literally hanging on for dear life going into college. And I think that's a really cool, you know, hopefully resonant point for people is like, yes, you go in for performance, but like you can feel better and you can ascend through older years, as we've seen with Ellie and many other people, which is you don't have to just get to 17, 18, 19 and then be like, oh, you know, had a good run, my body's falling apart, and I'll just try to, like, you know, enjoy these last couple of years. You know, that's just such a terrible way that I think gymnastics still unfortunately views it.
Yeah. That saying, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And it's, it, again, gymnastics has been kind of like this. It's a bubble where there are other options to take. And with other sports, you look 20 years ago and the introduction to more sports science, and they're going to training and like learning a lot more of, I guess, the science, and then applying that to the art of the sport itself, is you can start to feel a difference. So the emotion of feeling better, like, oh, my wrists and my ankles feel a lot better by just doing these few exercises, which has been probably out the scope of actually trying it out, and then being slowly introduced into it. And then with everything, with the data now and the science, it's more about, it's confirming what it is. And if they're open to doing it, and again, it takes time for it. And especially with the coaching side, it's always about like the performance at the end of the day with the athletes and the coaches. Obviously the well-being as well is a big, big part of that. But even just that little bit of exercise has been shown to have such great benefits for not just performance and not just the injury side, but it's like, you know, increased bone density, you know, connective tissue gets stronger, like everything gets a lot like firmer, and just everything starts to decrease. So thinking about it in a different way of longevity versus just being, I'm going to be great at this, because it's always a sliding scale. You can be really, I'd say, weak or injured in that sense. And then there's like ridiculously strong and powerful what you do. And it's never, you're not one or the other. It's always that sliding scale. So how do you maintain that balance where you're in the middle and kind of shift from side to side? And then maybe if you verge down that injury path, which you kind of got to, then what protocols or what things do I need to do to then get yourself back to that way? Like learning a skill. Your skills start to go and you bring that back up. So it's a similar protocol, I think.
Yeah. And a thought experiment I also play around with a lot, which is fascinating. And I guess there's two sides, the pessimistic and optimistic point of view, which is on the pessimistic side, it's like, how many gymnasts, unfortunately, in the last 10 years or 20 years, didn't really have their full potential fulfilled, or had a lot of injuries and they quit, or they couldn't quite get to their goal they wanted because of a lot of injuries or burnout. And how much more could have we maybe helped? I mean, obviously not everybody, but how much more could we have helped a large amount of them if they had been introduced to lifting at a young age and they had a little bit more periodization, they understood the mixed hybrid model that we kind of promote. And then there's obviously the optimist in me, which is that there's so much potential being left on the table, that there's so much more positive room to grow for the generation that is getting it now, who's really like starting to lift at 10 or 12 and is like, man, it's crazy to see what their career will look like, whether it's health and mental health and injury wise or just performance. And I think obviously you can sit more on one side of the fence if you'd like, but I'm more of the optimist, which is the reason I continue to work so much and try to harp on it, and I'm sure maybe you do too, is like the potential benefit is massive. For as hard as they work and as great coaching as there is, there's still so much potential left on the table because of this, I guess we're like missing a giant puzzle piece to this equation, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And it's promoted so much in school about being physically active, and especially now, like to be physically active will give you that longevity in life outside of performance. And just dipping your toes back into that and taking it away, it's so big. Like the opportunity is so big. I remember walking into first gymnastics gym and just watching the girls train, and I was like, "Well, this is great." I think a lot of people have that effect when they haven't really been.
It's controlled chaos, to say the least.
Yeah, it is. It's controlled chaos. But you see so much stuff, and what I see, especially with like gymnastics and dances, anything which requires more artistry. They're very good at hiding things. So the typical test that you do with certain athletes or movement screens or anything, they don't really apply to them unless you add load, add speed to it. And you're like, oh, okay, well, you're seeing this, you're seeing that. And, they're very kinesthetically aware of the body. So they can adapt to the way to train around it, except, you know, your muscles are still set a certain way, and you know your body still applies force to it in a certain way. So it's going to have an effect somewhere down the line. And being able to get onto that and strengthen everything up and like fix things where I like to tell the girls, there's gymnastic strength and there's gymnastic training, and then there's like everything else, the general side of it.
Yeah.
And if you take a gymnast out of gymnastics and apply that to other sports, it's a little bit funny to watch if they haven't done it as much when they're younger, but also you're like, this is such a big side they've missed. And we're not talking about the technical ability, but body awareness for that. And if you kind of have them in a like a sporting aspect of applying like force, they excel at that. The only difference is though, is that their bodies have been fixed so much to those movements where it's shaping. It just doesn't fit the general gist of how you perform. How would you add the normal aspect of say a run or a jump, which isn't the same as the artistry? So you can have both merged together, which is I think what everyone's trying to figure out, without losing the qualities. Then you've kind of got a one-stop kind of program, which is a hybrid, which helps everyone in the long run.
The running joke at Champion, the facility I work at, is that you can always tell the gymnast by when you ask them to laterally bound or laterally skip, because it's something they're so not used to. So usually they have like a 40-degree plantar flexion toe point, which nobody ever does in any other sport, and they just can't skip sideways. It's just hilarious to watch because they haven't done it in like 15 years. So yeah, that's always a hilarious running joke. And I kind of on that note, before we dive in specifically on more stuff, it sounds like you're kind of explaining that you are doing a lot of, I mean, maybe not the hand holding, but the training wheels to gymnasts that are first starting lifting, or parents that are, you know, like you say, pulling back the rock to look down that rabbit hole. And they're like, whoa, there's a lot here and I don't know what to do. And of course there's just, to be frank, there's just so much terrible advice online about lifting and kids and all that kind of stuff. So I feel like you're probably like the first line of defense against not only getting people to have a good experience, but also maybe speaking to some of their fears about lifting or stunting growth, like you're saying. So what are some of the things that you feel maybe parents or prospective coaches or people that are looking to get into lifting for the first time should maybe be aware of and kind of, you know, have their fears abated?
Yeah. So like in this field now, it's so vast. And there's so much information out there online. I'm just kind of figuring out where to look or where to start. And a lot of the time it's like, it's going back to principles of literally, if you're learning to ride a bike, then there are certain things you have to consider, like literally sitting down on the bike and using stabilizers to land, like things like that. And it's like, there's no, it's the same process as when you're learning to lift. Like, there's so much you can do with it. And I feel that perhaps with physical training, that emotional connection to it might be, it's a low perceived value. Because everyone can exercise, everyone can train, everyone can move their own body. Whereas they say, if you go to a clinic or a health professional or a physio, then it's like you have that motion taken away from you, and like it's like, oh, there's now I can't do what I love doing.
Yeah,
how do I get back to there? And I'll do what I need to do to get that. With training, it's a bit like, you know, it's part of it, and it's same as sport where. And everyone can do sport, but the physical side of the training is that this decreases the chances or risks to go to that, or you know, keep making trips to the physio.
Yeah, and
also it's like that missing puzzle of like, it should be sport, training the body, the physical qualities of it, and then coming back into performance, which you know, seeing physios for prehab and rehab sort of side of it and fixing what is going on. If that happens and you're leading back to, which again, the hybrid model, I think works so well, is that the movement is what you're trying to fix after having the initial injury and moving a funky way because you've had that injury. Then we have to look at getting that path in a suitable way or in a way which is best fitting to not going back to that same injury. So there's a low perceived value with that, which, once you're in it and you dip toe and you're like, wow, okay, this is what I need to do for it. And you start with people over, which, you know, it could take a few days, a few months, whatever you feel is the time needing to come back into that sport. There's also a difference of training to be fit versus training athletically.
Right.
And out there with social media and especially not learning this side of it, it's like, it's the way of getting fit is you can just kind of do everything. And I guess my perspective, what you do will kind of get you there. When you start training athletically, that's when you start looking to structure. Like the periodization to achieve a goal. Because it's not just how you feel. It's how you are achieving that with like suitable numbers now. Because you can't really see fully what you're doing in the movement. You need to see some sort of like figures or numbers, which give you kind of like, okay, I'm on the right trajectory right now.
Yeah.
So a lot of stuff on the internet, knowing your sport, having some sort of a needs analysis, figuring out, okay, in my sport, say gymnastics, there are multiple apparatuses that I'm going to be performing. And what are the key quality traits that I'm looking for? So if it is something like vault, and you know that you're going to be sprinting and running, long distance, sorry, but within that it's like, okay, so I know it's going to be qualities of running. So if I'm going to dip my toes into lifting, I know that I need to be really fast, I need to be powerful, I need to develop a lot of strength to be able to maintain that. So for that area, it's like, okay, so what do I need to get strong? Legs, powder them. I know that if I sprint faster, then I can develop that side of it. But again, there's so much stuff out there that if I'm going to dip my toe into this and this athletics training is telling me to do that, and then this physio might be telling me to do something different, and then my old track coach is telling me to do this. It's like there's so much stuff out there. So you kind of got to have like this is my little basis, and then I'm going to have my core movements or core lifts. And for that, it's the components of fitness. So strength, power, obviously flexibility comes into that. Looking at the aerobic system and looking at reaction time, all that sort of stuff comes into it, and you're just looking to use that as a basis to go off. If I need my legs to be stronger because most of my apparatus is going to be using lower leg predominantly, then potentially squats, potentially doing anything which you're hinging at the hips, which could be a deadlift or an RDL, something like that, where you're looking to also balance things out. Because if I develop too much leg power, I get really, really good at developing power, but I can't stop it, then there's a high chance that, you know, you have a really fast car and terrible brakes. there's a high chance you're going to crash. So down the line, you want to make sure that everything's starting to kind of balance. So you start making a little checklist or a little graph where you can figure out that if I have these three or four core exercises, which tick off my leg power and my stopping power, which is more like the hinge stuff, in upper body, it could be pushing and pulling and different planes. You're looking at those aspects to balance everything out. So you don't need so much, but you just need to do the small things very well.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love everything that you're saying there. And I think something that I really want to also hint on that you breezed by really well, but I think it's important to code, which is some people are, they see low perceived value in lifting, or others though, they just see like, oh, well, I already do gymnastics 20 hours a week and like, it's the same thing. So like, whatever. But you know, there's a very, very different structural and adaptive stimulus for power development when you're lifting weights versus doing body weight conditioning. And I think that's what people see. They're very surprised when they come to us, when we have them do three sets of five weighted pushups, and they're like, oh my God, this is so hard. And I'm so sore. Like, I've done 1,000 pushups in my life. It's like, well, the load of a weighted pushup is very different stimulus than 15 pushups really, really fast for metabolic strain. And I also find that's very true in the legs too, as well. Cause I can tell you every gymnast that comes to us is like, has done jump squats and split squats and, you know, resi squats and body weight squats and squats on their toes, but they've never put weight in their hands. And they do like goblet squats for a 5x5. I'm like, my quads are so sore. It's like, yeah, it's completely different, you know? So I think there's a lot of important value to be gained there, which is the type of, even though some of the movements look similar to what you may do in gymnastics, the approach is very different based on actual getting, you know, load on your body.
Yeah, definitely. It's the same thing of, I think what you see, you know, it could be from the coach's point of view or the parent's point of view, like 30 years down the line, it was, you know, the big thing of bodybuilding, you know, seeing Arnie. And that's the general image that has come from that, which it's done great for the fitness industry. It's done great for just being fit in general. Yeah. And you start to see trends start to change. So from bodybuilding, you start seeing perhaps like CrossFit come out of that. And then CrossFit is now getting to like the high intensity sort of training. And I feel it's like verging down where people are learning more and more into it. The next little stage is kind of like, oh, how do these professional athletes train? And you start to see the trends going that way. But, you know, seeing that area where that perceived value is all from, you know, the bodybuilding side. And like what we're doing now is so different. So if you're looking to build muscle, then you're looking to have sarcoplasmic hypertrophy. So the muscle gets a lot bigger, but you're really big at doing just that movement.
And all show, no go.
Exactly. All show, no go. So it looks great, but it doesn't, you know, doesn't function too well for everything else. Versus if you have more like a myofibular hypertrophy, the muscle size doesn't really get bigger, but the myofibula and the links between, say, the brain and the muscle, the firing frequency starts to increase. So in that sense, you're not going to get any bigger because you have a higher load of stimulation from the weight itself, which means that when you go back into it without any body weight, sorry, with just body weight, you're going to exert more force. So there's a higher demand through that, and you don't have to have tons and tons of muscle.
Yeah, and that's a great, I'm glad you said that, right? That knocks off quite a big fear. Probably one of the number one fears that a lot of people are saying, like, I would do it, but like the gymnasts will get bulky. They'll put on a couple kilos of non-functional mass. They'll lose all their skills. They can't do layout step outs anymore. And the whole world's going to fall apart. And it's like, okay, well, there's definitely going to be probably some adaptive stimulus of getting stronger, which is fine, but it's not like in the blink of an eye, you're going to put on a bunch of non-functional mass. Like you're explaining, it's a very, you know, functional power driven sports performance program. If you have someone who's programming for a proper periodization of that. And I kind of think on that line, which is what you said already, which is like, you do find yourself using some more basic exercises like squats and hinging or deadlifts, but given how many gymnasts you're seeing in the volume, are there certain exercises that are staples in your programs for most gymnasts particularly, or is it kind of like you feel as though they all get a general template and then move forward? Cause I've seen a lot of different stuff on your Instagram, and I'm curious if that's by design for gymnastics, or that's just how you program for most sports performance stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So with, I think with most athletes, there's always needs analysis for what they do. So I need to figure out like what are the basic demands from the sport, or what are the high demands for it. Looking at injury rates, especially looking at like how much time you're spending in the sport, and gymnastics spend a lot of time in the sport. You know, there's hours and hours and hours where you look at other sports and it's not, and you're like, that I would consider them like most gymnastics, even the level's not as high, like elite athletes, because you're spending so much time in that area.
Yep.
There's not many sports that spend that amount of hours training. So the level of where you get to and it's one thing, and it's for the sport to improve and like perform at a higher level. But the volume, especially being like an early development sport, it's so big for kids. It's such a big demand on the kids, especially as they're still developing. So like a lot of exercises that would fit, say, gymnastics athlete is very similar to a lot of the other kids. But what I find with a lot of other kids compared to gymnastics is that because the kids have been running and doing everything kind of outside of gymnastics and spending that amount of hours, they're great with that side, and they're developing technically what I've seen, like a lot of teens, younger kids that the gymnastics have already got. But what they are missing is that whole chain, so the kinetic chain of like joining the legs to core to uppers, it doesn't fire as well. One thing I like to do gymnastics is or gymnastic athletes is I like to use the reverse hype, and I like to use the glute hand develop machine,
right?
And I actually use it as a bit of screen now with the athletes, instead of just doing a movement screen. And less of, because I know the gymnasts are already going to be strong, so that kind of takes care of that. It's connecting the chain through the whole thing. So with a reverse hype, it's effectively you're on the edge, your feet are dangling off, and you're grabbing on top, and you're lifting up through that posterior chain, versus GHD, your feet are locked in and your body's here and you're now going the opposite. So I like to use those aspects from a top-down and bottom-up approach, and I'll just get them to hold an isometric. So it could just be their legs, or it could just be a really light load, and then I just get them to hold for, it could be 10 seconds, it could be 15, it could be 20, something like that, and just see what starts to drop, or what shaping they're going into. And if I know that they're going to a really strong gymnastic shape, then they're great at what they can hold, and I bring back to a general sort of preparation, sort of training, then I know that they're not going to be able to maintain that from a top down and bottom up approach. So that's the same with the GHD, with getting their legs far and making sure their posterior chain from the big toe, so calf to hamstrings to glutes and lower back, is that all going to fire? Or are they going to gain some sort of an injury for that because they can't maintain what ideally an isometric would be as a starting base of the exercises? So I like to use that as a bit of a screen now with more the teens, the older kids, but also I've been experimenting with the young kids, and you start to see that trend come through. Exercises for that though is they'll always be the basics of whether it's some sort of a squat movement. It could be bilateral or unilateral, and you can use it as a progression period. I usually like to start with bilateral because usually a lot of gymnastics have very good movement already. So if they move really well, then the isometric comes in and it becomes a stability thing. And if stability is really good, then I'll gain the or start training strength on top of that. And that's the kind of model that I use for figuring out any athlete, regardless if it's gymnastics or not, if there's going to be a step missed, which I feel with gymnastics, they're really good at the strength side of it in their shaping, but then they'll miss stability in a certain area. They've got great mobility. But how do we link those two up? So if they get really good at the basics of squat and then hinging, which I prefer to teach RDL first. And that's perhaps because I coach a smaller group of athletes. If I was coaching bigger groups of athletes, whole clubs, then it things change. Club sort of training.
It's like herding cats sometimes.
Yeah. 20, 30 athletes and stuff like that. You have to modify for the masses. Versus if you have smaller groups or even like one-on-one sort of stuff, then I can see whereabouts they are maybe skipping along that line, and I can just go straight to one point versus the other. So for lower body development, a really good squat, whether that again is a squat bilaterally or a single leg sort of squat, and then any sort of hinging, which ideally I like to do an RDL, because that really fires a chain up. But if they can't learn the RDL sort of side, then it'll be more the distal point of the hamstring. So more like hamstring bridges or anything like that, which most girls are good at, except when you go into like a reverse plank hold or like Chinese plank, that sort of stuff. I find it quite funny now putting that into it where it's like, oh, I just can do 30-second hold and just hold that position. It just fires and lights everything up. And like, oh, okay. The chain isn't, even though your hamstrings are ridiculously strong in, say, a Nordic or something, but you increase that chain up and you start to see things fall apart.
Mm, yeah. And it's so interesting too, because again, as we were talking about like myself or Scott or Dan or any other people who were doing these programs, we're kind of all learning our way uphill as we, there's no like PubMed, you know, meta analysis on best gymnastics exercises for lifting. Yeah. But it is funny how we all kind of circle the drain on the same types of stuff, like a basic squat, a basic hinge, a split pelvis, maybe some sled work, right? Like it really is a minimal effective dose, which can help these athletes because their training age for this is so low. I've worked with elites who have a training age of 18, they're 21 years old, and they're trying to make national team go to the Olympics, but like literally they've never done an actual loaded program before, and like a very basic A1A, 1B, 1C, and they're like, they're all like sweating and they're like getting work done. So it's great, you know, it's a good opportunity, but it's funny to see people have similar thoughts about like, yeah, just basic squats and RDLs, just nothing fancy, nothing crazy under the hood, you know?
Yeah, it's being able to do the basics savagely well. If you can do the basics well, then everything on top of that is building a good foundation. So it should apply for that. But again, I think gymnastics is such a specialty sport that those general foundations aren't really built at the start. So the older girls really build back, and it becomes that like, how can I manage this injury? How can I manage a certain movement pattern so that they just perform, and then let's really start to slowly increase their performance. With the younger kids, you can be like, sweet, you're pretty much, you're set, and you can morph into these movements, and then the development increase goes up. I had a girl start when she was 9 or 10, and some of the older girls I train are 15, 16, and a lot of it was like very small coaching, so I could get away with like progressing pretty quickly with certain things once I was happy with the amount of strength or the amount of decrease in sort of injury that I had. And one of the younger girls was able, she was 11 and 35 kilos and I got her to be able to hip thrust 200 kilos. And like, that's a big thing. And you're like,
I think I saw a video of a girl like hip thrusting 200 kilos. And I was like, for a triple. And I was like, what the
hell? Yeah. Yeah, we did a lot of work on that. So that's the one movement which is still a hip dominant movement, which does not give her back pain. So we're playing around with that movement with her, and you know, that was in a peaking sort of phase to get there. But also, like, we do a lot of isometric holds in that position because that just doesn't hurt versus the others. So when we're peaking towards comp, that's her main sort of lift, whereas like a squat or a deadlift is not a thing. So pairing that with a horizontal jump, because it is a horizontal lift, really gets the glutes engaged and gets that firing going horizontally versus like a lot of squats are great because it's great for structural panning, and same with the hinge and RDLing, but it's figuring out like, if yes, jumping's a big part of it, but also there's a lot of bounce. There's a lot of like higher rate of force development, which is just like minimal ground contact time and maximum force going out. So that will always kind of get into it. And I find it funny that the scoring for these girls for like RSI schools, the reactive strength thing, that which kind of get that bounce or that springiness. It's so high in gymnastics, and then you bring them to like a squat jump and a cat move jump.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay. There's some thing. So you can see the steps that have been missed, where they have such great spring. It's just part of the sport. And then you bring them out to like, okay, now you need strength and you need power. So strength is maximal force and power is more, I'd say, more on the velocity side of it. And having that sort of playing around that sort of chart, like, okay, well, you need to squat heavy to be able to handle the demands of the speed. But then if you're running so quickly, then there's also body weight and mass. And if these girls are doing the vault, and I think on the podcast you said there's something like, is it 18 or 24 times the body weight in the landing?
Yeah, 15 to 18 times body weight, ground reaction vectors, and for a double back on floor.
Yeah, you're looking at that and going like, okay, you can't handle a 12 kilo goblet squat. Then what? You kind of got to think like, well, if you can't do that, then surely that correlates to to that. So, you know, if a goblet squat's not great, then the best thing about it, and this is where the flexibility with training is, that, you know, if holding here is not going to be great, then hold into a different position or load from the hips or anything where you can just, you know, strengthen that chain. Or if loading down, you know, actually loading through the spine is not great, then just turn it horizontally and you start working on that horizontal force factor. So those sled pushes are great because coaching is so minimal. You can load up pretty well and it's quite safe, depending on what sort of positioning you're wanting, and if you want more sprint specific or if you want to do more of like a aerobic sort of session. And it's safe and effective, so most people can administer that. And then as you start going down that line and be like, okay, I can see that it's making a great effect, what else can I tweak in that certain little exercise where we're looking, okay, let's straighten the body, let's go into more of a march, let's go into a heavy march. And even though it's slow, it's still heavy. It still means that you're holding and maintaining that position, which then if you apply that to sprinting, and sprinting something like anywhere between 3 to 6 times your body weight per step, and they're pushing, you know, they weigh 30, 35 kilos and pushing 80 kilos, they can handle that loading. Mm. So it's an easy way of applying load, minimizing risk, reducing time to actual coaching and training, and get such a big demand from it.
Yeah. And it's fascinating too, as we were kind of talking before the podcast about the disconnect between, you know, people understand jumping and landing and how goblet squats equal landing a vault or jumping down sports. But for a sport that is so heavy in single leg jumping and landing and sprinting, right, for vault and for steps on floor and for, you know, horizontal force vectors, it's just wild to me that so much literature has shown the value of like weighted hip thrusts and, you know, different variations of sled work and sprinting to get horizontal force vector velocity. It's like you want to sprint faster to put more energy into the vault to do a layout and not a tuck. Well, we should probably get you to get stronger and then sprint in a way that, you know, you are strong enough to sprint. You understand technically how to sprint, and then we work on getting you like just running fast, right? And that's something that I think was the biggest maybe facepalm moment for me is when I started reading like Brett Contreras' research and many of the other great stuff from Lee Taft. I was like, my Lord, I'm an idiot with like actually knowing how to sprint and knowing how to get somebody stronger to sprint faster, as just opposed to just doing tons and tons of bodyweight squats. And I feel like that is still criminally underrated, is people doing hip lifts and split squats and sled work and understanding how that's going to directly correlate to running faster. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And like I'm by means no sprint expert in that, but you know, being able to coach multiple sports and starting to see the trends in, you know, field-based sports versus court-based sports or and gymnastics, it's, you start to see the trends going through, and like they're all doing the same things for that simple movement,
right,
which is running. And I think I define like a simple movement as if your grand can do it, then probably doing it. So if your grand can't do a handstand or do a layup, then it's like, you know, I wouldn't define that as a basic movement. So
you know, I'd pay good money to see my grandma deadlift, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, so
sorry,
like, if they can see that and especially feel the difference in that and know that this general stuff is gonna lead to that specific work and an increase in specific work for it, then you can start seeing that difference of like this general is just gonna fix most problems without having to go too technically into it. And once you get down to that side of it, there is that technical aspect of, if you want to break down strength, then it's looking like, okay, so strength is classified as pretty much like expressing the ability to exert force. And if that's exerting force, then there are different parts of that strength. So you have max strength, speed strength, strength speed, starting strength. And you have like reactive strength and strength endurance. Like all those aspects are little things that you can change in the exercise. So something like a speed strength is, you know, you're not going to lift near maximum of what you're doing, but then you can lift it pretty quickly. And then that has more of a different effect where it's creating more, you know, mind to muscle, where those neurons are firing quicker, so you push more force and don't have to lift as much. But in that sense of, you've trained that, you now have to train something which is like a speed strength. So the movement is not going to be moving it fast at all, but the intent to move the heavy weight is allowing you to develop those properties to move something with less load faster.
Mm.
And things like that can play around with, again, having something really heavy versus not too heavy, a squat or a hip thrust. So let's say with Georgia lifting that 200 kilos in the hip thrust for three reps, that would be a considered more more kind of maximal strength. And if you look at the like a plyometric continuum, sort of plyometric, yep. the force velocity graph,
yep.
High force. There we go. High velocity,
yep,
in that area. And just on that curve, you're looking like, okay, so if a max squat's here, and then as you go down, that's max sprinting or speed work, which is really underrated in what you're doing. Like just if you just run fast two times a week, near maximal, like you'll gain so much out of it because your body's still moving fast. And again, I'm talking like 4 to 6 times your body weight or something like that with a sprint, then you're already applying that amount of force. So again, coming back to Georgia, if she's hip thrusting 200 kilos there, and then we apply that to a jump, just more low on that velocity curve, you know, a little bit of that kind of contrast training of like really heavy. So she's like, I've just exerted so much force here. And then you decrease where there's no load or very, very minimal load and get them to explode into the movement, then you're going to have more of a power development. So as you keep training that over time, your body adapts to that, and this comes near the peaking side of comp, then you can have that rely into your sport. So your body still thinks that you're doing that, and you can apply that demand and that principle versus, 50 squats or 100 squats, and then you may be conditioned where I feel that doing high rep work is a necessity, especially for like tissue tolerance and tissue work. But if you're looking for the power work and you're looking to develop that side where it's not about muscle, it's more about the connective pathway, then you need to stimulate the body in different ways.
Yeah. And you're kind of dancing around this important topic, which is, I think, the most common question that I get from people is, you know, whether it's social media or whatever, they see people lifting a ridiculous amount of weight, like really advanced athletes that have been with you for years or have been a champion for years. And they're like back squatting or trap bar deadlifting, you know, like 225 with change for speed on like a velo. And it's like, holy hell, like that looks so intimidating. So when someone is coming to you and they're asking about, you know, how much weight to start with in sets and reps, like, I think sometimes it can tip either way, which is, you know, a strength coach who's maybe well-intentioned but uninformed will get a well-moving gymnast who's eager, ready to learn, and they just bury them in volume and weight, and they're so sore they can't do anything. Then you get the other side, which is like they treat them like a glass cannon, which is like, we're not going to do anything. We're just going to barely touch it, you know? And so I feel like that happy medium is really important. But when parents or people start their program with you, where do you start with that set rep scheme and like and or weight, and how do you determine how much weight to start with, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. I think with social media is very much like devil's advocate.
Yeah.
Everyone likes to show the show off stuff. So George lifting 200 kilos, they're like, whoa. You know, 2 years ago, there was a struggle to lift, you know, like a 16 kilo squat and kettlebell, like things like that. And it takes time to build up because you don't want to break them straight away.
Yeah. Right?
And like a lot of people, I feel this is in maybe other sports, and you find it with males as well. Like they'll just be like, let's lift heavy. Let's go for it. And with girls, it's like, I want to step back. Before I forget one of the points, velocity training and velocity readers. That's something I'm playing around with this year, especially with the females, because a lot of the time there is a correlation between how fast you're pushing, which is kind of giving you like an aspect of power and strength of like starting strength or max strength work. And I'm what I'm trying to get with the girls is I need to get them to move weight quick, but at the right weight versus them feeling a certain way and then being like, okay, you can actually lift more than you think. So with a lot of them, it's like I can play around this velocity and they can get read and be like, oh, you can do that really quickly. What reading is that? And it's like, oh yeah, okay, I need to add more weight. Yeah, right. So it's getting them to have ownership on that.
I saw those meters per second, you're lying.
Yeah. But with people starting out, it's like I still go through that checklist of like there's an ease analysis of what the sport demands, and then there is a aspect of like are they really mobile with their movement, which most gymnasts are. Okay, the stability and strength side of it is what we have to play around with. Can they hold an isometric reverse plank? Things like that. If not, cool. We have to work on your time and tension and making sure that you can, if you generate that force, that you're body can maintain that path. So choose an exercise. Let's say, let's keep it with the hip thrust motion. It's a hip thrust from floor, and then you're starting to add a little bit of load to it. What we used to do in the academy, it was like a technical aspect for them and not being sore for it would be like, you know, it'd be like a set of five, which would be technically a strength, and a strength parameter of it, but it's more for movement efficiency. Mm-hmm. And then you start playing around that later. But with these girls, because it's an early onset of, it's an early development sport, that sort of traditional LTAD or the YPD model, youth physical development model, doesn't really apply. Or it does, but it shifts so forward.
Yeah.
You've got to play around and be careful with it, because too much loading can break them. Underloading isn't too much, but then the needs for the sport requires a set amount of loading and volume for it. So I like to stick with, quite traditional with like three sets of 10. And I play more around with like a traditional movement, like say a squat. And then I'll go for a more range squat, which is, it's kind of like that knee over toe squat, but I want to feel strength through that range and then kind of have both ends of the spectrum. And if they feel comfortable with that and everything feels great, okay, we start loading that a little bit more. So a three sets 10 for that, some sort of tissue tolerance work would be up to 20 to 25 reps on a really light thing or a band or band work or something like that, which you kind of get a bit of a burn for, but it doesn't lead to soreness later on through the week or through the program. And once you have that stage of, I guess, muscle morphology, then we can start playing on adding in heavier loads or high velocity sort of things, keeping the movement base of the strength side of it and the power, playing around with that. I like to do a lot of like half French contrast training or just contrast training. Just if you move something relatively heavy and controlled and it looks okay for like three sets of 10, and you add some sort of a maximal effort sort of jump or even like a sprint or sled push, something like that, you can gain a lot of quality over time to have that mass effect versus say more the Arnie sort of side of training or the bodybuilding side of training. Is like, if you're always sore, then you're going to have diminishing returns for your sport.
Right.
So finding that happy medium place with creating that foundation, three sets of 10, three sets of 12, higher sort of rep for tissue quality, and then playing rounds like long lever and short lever movements, a box squat versus a full depth squat, and then start increasing that to a developmental phase where like they can handle the loading because their body's ready for that, especially with all the younger girls. And then we can be like, okay, let's start adding a little bit of load, which is enough, but isn't going to make you sore for your training. And then once they have developed that over a year, 2 years, something like that, then we start developing performance. And okay, now let's move this heavy thing fast. So I've just started teaching one of the girls a clean from a floor. And we've been training for 2 years. And like, it's always been hang on, and it's always been other sort of developments, and it would never really get to that. But I feel that with social media and seeing CrossFit and like other sports and seeing other girls doing it, it's like, well, yeah, okay, we can start going to that. We have a bit more time before the season starts. Let's try it out and have set some goals for her to hit. So, it's looking at setting that foundational period to then the developmental stage to then the performance and making sure that it looks like it's that. The one thing that does differentiate.
Yep.
Is even though it might be the perfect program, it never will be when you're in season.
Right.
There's going to be injuries. There's going to be soreness. There's going to be tiredness. And if it's in that stage where it's, if they are injured, then you have to look to pull things back. But that doesn't mean you have to stop training. And right. I think that's a big thing with the parents. If you are injured in some sort of a way and your legs still work, your upper body still work, you can still have crossover demands of neural drive because you're not trying to build that one muscle of literally just that. Yeah, you're looking at how can that affect to that to give you that that still the demands for the sport. So being really structured, but also being willing to change your approach to it, I think it gives a bit more of a an open feel to keep your basics really tight or your principles. Three sets of 10 for hypertrophy. It could be four sets of five or five sets of five for strength, and going into power if you go into that towards the end of the start of comp. Like, it's quite simple in the way you want to do it, except if you want to go down the rabbit hole and start looking at fine details, then you know, that's also a time to cross that path when it needs to be.
Yeah, for sure. And it's funny because, like, even like as someone who has heard the same kind of thoughts over and over and really understands kind of what needs to be said to people to understand, it's not what you see in CrossFit. It's not what you see on, you know, an Arnold program, stuff like that. I feel as though, like, when somebody hears you say it like this, like, oh yeah, three sets of 10 and not too much volume and basic exercises, it all kind of makes sense. You know what I mean? And I was looking through our questions and we're going to chat about some of the myths, but I think we kind of hit the one on bulkiness and all that jazz. So I think the best place to end this is, if I gave you a billboard that every gymnastics coach and parent who is thinking about lifting or is thinking about trying a hybrid model could see in the world, like, are there things that you wish they could all understand or know about what the reality of lifting in a hybrid model is versus what maybe the misconceptions on social media are?
Yeah. So with coaches and parents have, I'd say, a different approach to it. Because it's whatever you spend the most time is going to be that sort of area. And if I think a big thing for coaches is that even though you're looking at lifting and you're looking to incorporate this in, if you're a bit of an older coach, then it's really good to look at other sports. Actually, that'd be for younger and older coaches, looking at other sports and how they apply it, because they just have a different way of, you know, being open to applying that method and seeing the changes. And it's because maybe it's not so much of a private sport that they're really open to having that new way of science to help aid the sports itself. But also with a lot of younger coaches as well, is that, like, the more you try stuff, and if you just start going to gym and not just train so much for fitness, but one thing with one of the first coaches we had is, maybe this is with gymnastics coaches, all sports coaches after, is that I find that gymnastics coaches work really well when they try the movements and when they try the effect, versus just being like told what to do.
Yeah.
And the more you get it, the better it is. And you can just do something and be like, oh, you have to do this, this, and this. And like, well, starting to ask questions and start being proactive about it. And they start having that, that change of like, ah, okay, I see why. And then, once you know the feeling, because I'm sure if most gymnastics coaches may have come from a gymnastics background, they have felt what the effects were and how it affected them. So then you can have that same feeling and effect for the athlete that you're now coaching. The only difference is with trying out yourself and being fit is that, like, data now does really help that. I'm able right now, well, I'm fortunate to have just got the force plates from Bald. Which just, I can't wait to play around and give the actual, like, data for full coaches to be able to be like, right, that's the sort of direction you need to be looking at training. How it can affect training in gymnastics is that, like, there's a certain skill which has that quality of, like, a repeated jump or just maximal strength, and it can be like, okay, they're really good at that, but they're really poor at that. So even though that exercise might be great for them in that, this is the focus, or this is the quality that you need to be spending a little more time on. Gives them that direction of where to go versus that overall training side. Don't be afraid to ask for help.
Yeah,
it's a big one. There's a lot of, I think, again, that perceived value of fitness is a little bit lower, or training is a little bit lower because everyone can do it. And hopefully from this is a little bit of a different perspective, and same with a lot of strength coaches or like more hybrid models, you start to see that things change differently and you can apply in so many different ways. And the more people you talk to and ask questions through and look to get different advices from, again, a coach who doesn't, maybe is a strength coach and doesn't work in gymnastics, but works in say soccer or basketball, like the same similar principles apply from this to that, because the basics of strength, power, flexibility, you know, reaction times, and like everything in those components of fitness has a crossover. There's always going to be a teething time where you have to, it took me a good year and I'm still learning loads in gymnastics. to be like, okay, these are the qualities that we really need to focus on. Those are the main injuries that we're getting and you're feeling. That's pretty big. The one for parents is it's definitely to do your own research. Again, there's so much stuff out there, but also seeing a certain practitioner who's qualified and who has an idea of a direction versus giving them just the general, because if you can go to a normal gym and give them a certain training program, you'll see improvements, because kids or people who haven't done too much in general strength training, you'll always see an improvement.
Right.
It just gets to the point where you're like, I've done too much of this, and now I've got higher tendinopathy in my knee or something like that. And it's like, okay, well, now we need to get smart on our training side of it. And sure. And also what you see on social media and what you saw on TV 30 years ago is not what you're gonna see things going now. And being able to see Ellie Bat train and a lot of those high elite athletes actually perform, and you're like, it's okay to do this, and being open to it is a better way of seeing that it's okay to dip your toe into it and start learning and create a basis for yourself.
Yeah, man, I dig it. I think those are very wise words, and I think a good way to kind of wrap things up in a nice little bow. I mean, I could sit here and talk to you for 4 more hours about all this dork stuff, and you know, it'd be wonderful, but we both have lives, unfortunately, we have to get to. So, well, I appreciate all the stuff that you offered. I mean, it's super, super cool to hear your perspective, where you've come from, and kind of the fact you've gotten to a good place. And fortunately for a lot of us, though, there's more Tom to come, which is we're going to have you on the third day of our symposium, which is really cool. And I think we're still working this out, but I feel as though we're going to land somewhere in the speed and power department for gymnasts. Is that probably something we'll dance on?
Obviously speed and power in a lot of sports is a big element, and it's always fun to dive down into it. Can always geek out about it, so yeah, a big part of that. Yeah,
cool, man. Well, we are looking forward to having you, and I thank you for, you know, the time now. I thank you for all the work probably that will happen to go into that lecture and that symposium, stuff like that. And it'll be fun to kind of keep in touch, and we too have valve plates, fall plates, so we should definitely connect on that. Joanna, our sorts head of sports science, is way down that rabbit hole, to say. So we are for sure able to share a lot of that. So yeah, man, for now though, we'll call it here before we run on a tangent. So I appreciate it, and thank you for coming on.
Yeah, and thank you to you and Becky for getting on the podcast, and I guess getting a different perspective across, and sharing a little bit of insight into what I do.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Happy to have you.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Cheers, man.
See ya.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to that episode. I hope that you really enjoyed it and got a lot of value out of it. I just want to let you know before we sign off here that a couple things we'd love you to do. So one is, please just make sure that you rate and review the podcast on iTunes or Spotify or Stitcher, wherever you're listening, because that really does help the episode grow quite a bit. And then second, if you really enjoyed this episode, we would love if you left us a review as well and told us what you liked about it. You know, what information was useful, what things were not useful, would you like to know more about, what guests you want to have on in the future. And then also, as you kind of go about your day, if you found something really useful, just toss it up on social media. We love to hear from people on Instagram or Twitter or, you know, all the different websites that they're using for social media. Facebook is great too. But yeah, let us know what you like, because honestly, the podcast comes from people who just tell us what they're finding useful. And that's how we create the next set of content. So yeah, tag us in the podcast or tag us online, whatever you're doing, and let us know what you think. Thanks.